is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show. This year is my discussion with Franklin School Superintendent Sarah Ahern and Davis Thayer Facility Analysis Ad Hoc Subcommittee Chair Elise Stokes. Our discussion was conducted via conference bridge to adhere to the social distancing requirements of this pandemic period. The recording runs around 27 minutes, so let's listen to my conversation with Sarah and Elise and find out more about what the Davis Thayer Ad Hoc Subcommittee is doing. There are several links in the show notes on the survey or questionnaire, the facility analysis document, presentation, report, etc., etc. So let's listen in. Steve Sherlock here for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, WFPR-FM, anywhere on the internet, and 102.9 on the local Franklin area dial. Today, we're going to be talking the Davis Thayer Facility Analysis, and we've got with us our school superintendent, Sarah Ahern. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me.
And Elise Stokes, the chair of the subcommittee on the Davis Thayer. Elise, good morning.
Hi, Steve. Glad to be here.
Great to have you both. Davis Thayer Facility Analysis. Give us the short story to start. Why are you doing what you're doing?
I will jump in and start to explain a bit about how we brought the retirement of Davis Thayer to be studied. We have a policy, FCB, Retirement of Facilities, and back in the fall of 2019, I had suggested through a memo to the school committee at that time that they examine the possible retirement of Davis Thayer for two reasons. One is that we knew in the district that we had experienced a decrease in enrollment over the past decade or so. And the other is that the building was built in 1924 and had some areas to be looking at from a safety perspective, from an educational perspective as well, and had made the suggestion to the school committee to look at the possible retirement of the facility. And at that time, the committee established a subcommittee, an ad hoc subcommittee, meaning that the subcommittee is not a permanent subcommittee of the school committee, but is designated for a particular task. And in this case, they were tasked with enacting this policy related to the possible retirement, which was built into a five-step process of gathering information and then making a recommendation to the full school committee, ultimately based on the evidence that would come forward.
And Elise, I think you're very familiar with that five-step process.
That's true. We give updates at every school committee meeting and all our subcommittee meetings. And really the five-stage process helps ground us and organize us and helps remind us not to put the cart before the horse, not to get too far ahead of ourselves. And so stage one is gathering information. And this has been taking many months. This is gathering information from a variety of sources and in a variety of ways, some in district sources and some outside more objective contributors. We're currently in stage one of the five-stage process. We've completed the first phase of stage one. And in that first phase, we were reviewing policy FCB, which Dr. Ahern mentioned, the policy for retirement of facilities, to ensure that we were addressing all the components of the policy to make sure that we were covering all the bases that were outlined there. Back in February, we received the enrollment forecast report from McKibben and Associates, which outlined the current population and forecasted population for the town of Franklin and resulting enrollment for the Franklin Public Schools. That was a big component of the data we were gathering. We also reviewed the DT facilities report from 2013 and reviewed any subsequent renovations or work that had been done to the building since that report. We recently received the Castle Booz Comprehensive Facilities Analysis Report, which looked at all our schools K through 8 and included the headings of looking at the capacity, looking at the educational adequacy scores of each school, and then giving us summarizing their information and giving us recommendations moving forward, both short term and long term. After receiving all that information, that wrapped up our first phase of stage one, and now we're moving into phase two of stage one. We're gathering staff, family perspectives, community perspectives. We're gathering information on staffing consideration, looking at transportation factors, looking at our district map, gathering information and data from the district on financial considerations. And of course, we have to be thinking about and planning for physical distancing factors. And as the pandemic changes and updates and expectations change and shift, that's something that we're continually focusing on and folding into our work as far as gathering information for this process. After stage one is complete, after we've gathered all the information, we'll move to stage two, which is evaluating options. So as a subcommittee, we'll summarize all our information from stage one. We'll list and consider important factors and determine possible options. And then we'll present that to the full school committee. Stage three is when the full school committee will vote to approve an option from stage two. Stage four, we'll plan the actions. We'll develop an action plan based on that school committee vote. And stage five will be actually implementing, taking action on that established plan from stage four.
There's a defined process, clearly, as you've outlined, and a lot of the basic data, as you've mentioned, between the policy, which also outlines what steps you need to do. The enrollment forecast was key. The facility analysis was key. Now you're really looking at that community input piece in its various factors to bring together to complete all of that stage one info so that the subcommittee can then say, okay, this is all we have. And at that point, you can start then determining what your options are and what you would present to the school committee.
Right, exactly. Gathering perspectives and input and opinions from the stakeholders is a really important piece that really just adds to our information that we have.
And part of the stakeholder input, we'll slip it in while we have it at the opportunity. There's a survey out, which you've shared. There are hard copies available. I've shared it through the Franklin Matters channels. That is one of a couple of vehicles, but the primary one in terms of asking the specific questions, getting answers on those specific questions, which then gives you data then to fill into your process.
Right, exactly. And also some people have been emailing the subcommittee. There's a link right on our website to contact the subcommittee. And the email actually goes to the full school committee just to keep everybody in the loop. But that any emails we get, all of that is documented. We have a big Google sheet that contains every email we've received and sort of what the key issues were. So we're able to, at stage two, when we're evaluating our options, we'll be able to sort of quantify that and look at what people's email concerns and questions have been.
So as you go through, you can at least say, we got everything.
Right.
There's a checklist.
Right, exactly. And I think that helps me, we get emails in waves at different times. And so just to help me making sure it's all in one place, it's all represented, it all counts for something. Nobody's being missed or forgotten. It's all sort of housed in the same place. That helps me feel better in my responsibility as far as ensuring that everybody's voice is heard.
Sarah, I was just going to queue up you some of the data that you, between you and Miriam, I believe, are providing in this phase two piece of, you know, the additional data. While we've already got the consultants out on the enrollment and the consultants on the facilities piece, there's still a bunch of district data that you're providing into the mix as well.
There definitely is additional district data to include. I think the community perspectives are coming at a really important point in time. The consultants have come in, given us the enrollment forecast for the next 10 years, And then we have the facilities analysis report, both of which have been shared through the Davis-Thayer website, not the Davis-Thayer website, but the Davis-Thayer closing study website. Right. And people can check out the outcomes of both of those reports. But we also held two community information sessions following presentations that were made to the school committee so that the community could learn more about what those reports had said. Following up from that, and to be folded into consideration for phase two, are some data collection points that Miriam and I are working on, which is feasible now because the facilities analysis report had made some recommendations about how to move forward. And what seemed like, you know, potentially an infinite number of solutions has really been narrowed down as we've looked at our enrollment trends as well as the functional capacity of our buildings. So the architect's report had talked about the possibility of moving Davis-Thayer students to Keller Elementary School. This would keep the students at Annie Sullivan, which is where they would flow for middle school. So based on that scenario, we're able to run some budget figures related to staffing considerations, transportation factors, as well as other financial considerations that may come up. One commonly asked question related to other financial considerations is related to Title I. Title I is a federal grant that we use in a targeted assistance way and apply it based on poverty percentages, and the money is currently allocated to Davis-Thayer and Parmenter schools for additional math and literacy supports for students. And there is a Title I consideration that will be included in our analysis of those financial aspects. So we're looking at that this winter, and we will bring some additional data to the subcommittee to consider in addition to the information that they have from the community perspectives, as well as the architect's report and the enrollment forecast.
Yeah, and on the Title I piece, as I recall, and to help clarify, because it has been a question asked in a number of forums, the money effectively follows the students and families, and it's more and thereby aligned with a school. So it's not permanent, if you will, to Davis-Thayer or Parmenter. It depends upon where those students are.
It depends on where the students are, and then it depends on the poverty percentage within the school population. And if Davis-Thayer students went to Keller, that would redistribute those students among the population differently. And we would then need to take a look at the percentage poverty rate in all of our elementary schools, and we may need to allocate the monies a little differently. It mm-hmm. wouldn't automatically follow students to a new school. We may need to allocate those that money differently depending upon the new poverty percentages across our elementary schools.
That's a key point. And you continue to pull the puzzle pieces together, at least in terms of my mind. You've got, at first, you didn't know even the size of the puzzle other than, okay, this was the task. Now you've got some defined puzzle pieces. So now you can start doing the pros and the cons and the ifs and thens, but you're still getting closer to what does that final puzzle piece look like and what are the options to go forward?
Definitely. And I think that within the reports that we've received, there's a lot of detail. So, and I think that the detail really matters, which is why we're taking our time to work through the possibility of closing Davis-Thayer, as well as some of the other recommendations that came from the architect's report, which include some of our other elementary schools. One of the major findings was that our standalone elementary schools are older and not at the same, both not at the same functional capacity and not at the same educational adequacy as determined by the architect, based on the year in which they were built. And so we know that long-term, the Parmenter School and the Kennedy School are two areas that we need to be looking at. And the architect's report does recommend something of a master facilities plan be put in place to take into consideration all of the schools K to 8 in light of the enrollment decrease that is forecasted. One, I think, misunderstanding about the enrollment forecast is people hear that we've had an enrollment decrease over the past 10 years and we're going to continue to decrease. And the magnitude of that decrease over the next 10 years is a decrease of 12%. But that decrease is going to be most felt in the middle school and the high school as right. students kind of move through the years. We actually have already experienced our greatest decrease at the elementary level. Over the next 5 years, we are expecting a small decrease in the number of students, but then it's actually forecasted to go up a little bit over the next 10 years. I think that, taking error into consideration, it's probably pretty flat and pretty level over the next 10 years in terms of our elementary population. But I think that's an important point that I wanna make for the community because we're not expecting a continued enrollment drop in elementary, but we are expecting to see it at the middle school and at the high school. The high school, that's gonna be a welcome relief knowing that the school was built for fewer students than we currently have. So we actually could use some additional space. So then the question becomes what about the space that we have at the middle schools? And again, that's where I think a master facilities plan will be really helpful long-term as we take into consideration many, many factors, additional factors than is just listed here related to the closing of Davis Thayer.
And I think the key point from my perspective, there's certainly some parallels with prior enrollment forecasts. There clearly are waves and we're in another set of waves coming through. So even at the high school, as an example, clearly each grade kind of is a cohort. So that grade, when it starts in elementary, kindergarten, moves up 1, 2, then that wave goes through and that's where the middle school and high school. To your point, the high school was built for 1650 or 1600, and it's been servicing 1700 plus since it opened. But the incoming freshman classes are going to be more in the 300 range rather than the 450 range. So it'll come back to its normal piece, and that'll continue to go. The other big question nobody will know until about 6 years from now is, what's the pandemic effect to that enrollment piece? But fortunately, we'll know within 9 months or so where the births appear. And then 5 to 6 months later, they'll start appearing in schools. So it won't be a surprise.
Yeah, and we do track that data in terms of births in town as we make predictions for our incoming kindergarten and grade one.
Correct. Yeah.
I have a thought on, or a frequent question that I've heard is if the enrollment is going to drop about 12% on average, which essentially stays level for elementary, maybe a slight increase, then why would we be focusing on closing schools if it's going to be the same as it is now? But I think the important thing that was before my time here on school committee, certainly even as a parent of students in the district, was that these elementary schools had many more students filling them than they do now. So even if we drop a little bit and come back up to where we are now, our schools still aren't at full functional capacity. No. So we still have extra space in many schools. And I think that's an important perspective to remember when we're looking forward. We're always looking forward 10 years, looking forward 10 years. But if we look back, 6 or 10 years, the numbers were very different with the same amount of schools.
And I think to reference that, if we ask people to remember, and again, because their kids are now in elementary, thereby you'd have to remember from, say, a middle school, high school perspective, while Kennedy, I think, is the only one that has the modular units left, there were modulars at all the elementary schools for a number of years. But those are all gone, and thereby there's other spaces that are being used by the special programs, whether it's Stride or Reach, et cetera. The space is not empty. It is being utilized, but maybe not in the most efficient way. And that's a discussion point that there's nuances there. It's not a simple question.
I think the idea of the specialized programs is an important one to kind of further explore here. Davis Thayer does not have any specialized programs housed in it. And we did not do a lot of analysis related to the future of our specialized programs and the future growth of those specialized programs. The architect's report did take into consideration the functional capacity of rooms that are used for special education services and special education programs. And typically you have fewer students in those rooms than you do in a typical classroom. So part of the formula that they were looking at is looking at, you know, in our current times, in terms of the capacity, taking into consideration these specialized programs across the district. One of the things that I think long-term we need to do is we need to be thinking about, as best we can, because there is some unpredictability, but as best we can, think about how our specialized programs are operating and the potential growth there. We know that we've had an expansion in classrooms, in ideas and in goals, and in the NEC partner program. And those classrooms don't fit as many students in them. They require more additional spaces. And so that would be part of a long-term master facilities plan where we would be taking a look at that. But the current report didn't necessarily take that into consideration.
Yeah, and I think one of the other aspects to also frame the discussion, the reason for those special programs being in district is the district does achieve a savings, because instead of sending those students out of district, you've got transportation costs plus the special ed costs, you're able to better service them within district. Obviously, there's still a cost associated with it, but it's less than if we sent them out of district. So yeah, while we've got many moving parts, you've got a facilities efficiency, you also have a budget layer to that, which, you know, the nuances are, that's where the real discussion is.
Yeah, that's a really good point. There is definitely, and we do see a cost savings by having programs within our district. And when we're large enough to have cohorts of students and be able to create these programs here in-house. And it's also, I think, a source of pride and something that we value in terms of our inclusive school community. It's evident, I think, throughout all of our schools, and I'll use our Best Buddies program at both elementary, middle, and high mm-hmm. school as an example of the ways in which all of our lives are enriched by the diversity and inclusive community that we have. So it's also a value to us. And so those are some of the considerations around all of this that we need to be thinking about, and the layers that you speak of.
A complex piece. No easy answers, but you're working through the process step by step, stage by stage, to get to, you know, filling in the puzzle pieces that we were talking about. So from here, clearly, I think to summarize briefly, you've completed the phase one of stage one. You're deep into phase two of stage one. The community still has opportunity to provide input via the survey, via the email. The prior community information sessions are available. I know I've shared them via audio. I believe you've got at least the video. Maybe the second video will be up if it's not there already. So people can still find out and clearly reinforce to participate in the school committee meetings, participate in the facility analysis subcommittee meetings as they go forward. You know, this is not being done in a vacuum. This is being done in the community. And this is one of the reasons why we're doing this today, sharing to bring, this is the point in time, this is where we've been, this is where we're going. And listen, participate, ask questions, don't be bashful.
As we conclude, I will just put another plug out there for people to fill out the questionnaire. We are looking for current parents, current staff members, parents of former Davis Thayer students, other Franklin Public Schools parents, Franklin Public Schools staff members, residents and community members. It's really intended to be answered by everybody in town who has an interest and a stake in the study and in the decision that the school committee is looking at. And that survey is available via a link. It's been shared on social media. It's on our Davis Thayer Facilities Analysis website. Steve, I know you have shared it, and we appreciate that. We are currently anticipating a closing date of December 2nd, which is a Wednesday.
Wednesday after Thanksgiving, yep.
We may extend it depending upon the number of responses that we get. So we have some target numbers that we are hoping to get from the community. But right now it is scheduled to close on December 2nd. And if you don't have or would prefer to, if you don't have access to the survey through a computer or device, we do have paper copies here available in the lobby of the municipal building, and you can just drop those off in the town mailbox, and we would be happy to take a paper copy if you wish to submit it that way.
And I believe you also have copies available with the Senior Center.
The Senior Center does have copies. I'm not sure exactly how they have been sent out, but we did send them to the Senior Center to make available.
Right. So anybody listening at least can contact the Senior Center and figure out how to get a copy that way.
Sure.
Well, thank you for spending the time. This has been, you know, I always a learning thing for me, which is why one of the reasons why I continue to do this, but hopefully it's a learning thing for some of the community. And I think the facilities report clearly brought out that just because Davis Thayer was the initial piece, it does affect everybody in some way or another. So I would encourage, and I'm sure you would second and third that, everybody should be involved, because at some point in time, it's really for the best of all our students, no matter which school they're at. Davis Thayer just happens to be one of the topic in the discussion at the moment.
Right. And I think I do want to clarify that piece, because when we first got the report and read through the report and saw the recommendations talking about much more than just Davis Thayer, talking about the other standalone schools, talking about consolidating into a possibly having one middle school in Franklin, as a subcommittee, we had to have a discussion that really fleshed out what exactly is our role here. Are we responsible for all these recommendations? Are we considering all these recommendations, or are we really keeping our blinders on and following our process and really just remembering, thinking about studying, doing a comprehensive closing study of Davis Thayer? And it ended up being that last. So we're really focusing on Davis Thayer, even though the report brought out tons of other information that can be so valuable in the future in other ways. As far as our subcommittee's going, we're really just sticking to looking at Davis Thayer. And the full school committee and the district in the future will plan, you know, what's the master plan? Where are we going with all the facilities? How are we going to incorporate some of these other recommendations?
Yeah, good reinforcement. Absolutely. Well, thank you, Elise. Thank you, Sarah. I certainly appreciate taking time from your busy schedules to share this with the community. And I'm sure if we have an opportunity, we can come back to do this again.
Thank you, Steve. Definitely happy to do so.
Yes, thanks so much for having us, Steve.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio, WFPR-FM. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana. Copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. You can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.